Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Episode 69.
69. It finally happened. The 14-year-old boy in me has been waiting for this with bated breath.
Me too. Okay, enough of that. Jen, how has your week been?
It's been good. It's been great. The beautiful weather has finally come to New York City. Thank you, universe.
My ankles are showing.
Mine aren't, because I still have a thick winter carpet that I need to address at some point this week.
Yeah, maybe this week is the week.
Yeah, I look a bit like a baby bear, so I'm just going to pour some Nair on
cute,
that.
So, anyway, well, I'm Jesse Kiefer.
Oh, and I'm Jen Tellick.
If anyone didn't know that already. I had a great week. I super busy at work, and then I was able to escape on Thursday. I took my girlfriend Erin for her birthday. I took her to Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Oh, my
word. I surprised her. A documentary called The Punk Singer was playing at the Boston Film Festival.
About
Kathleen Hanna.
Kathleen Hanna. The other great love of her life.
Yes, it's true. So one of the kind of the beginners of the Riot Grrrl movement, 90s punk feminist movement in the early 90s. So I was incredibly excited to take her to that. It's kind of a love we share. Kathleen Hanna is a love we share. And took her to that movie and ate some great food in Cambridge. And
where'd you go?
We went to this restaurant called Craigie on Main, which one of our guests today, Scott Haas, wrote a book called The Back of the House, The Secret Life of the Restaurant, and he spent a year at Craigie on Main and kind of overseeing Tony Maz there. And we had to check it out. I'd interviewed Scott, and he's going to be on soon, and it was delicious. They took such good care of us. We just ate at the bar, really simple, but
I feel like that's always the best option, especially if you're going to a place that you've been referred to or where you know someone. I mean, you have no choice but to have a consistent dialogue about the food because the bartender's right there. I love it. I prefer it. Plus, you don't have to stare at someone the whole dinner.
you can look off into space without seeming like a total jerk.
You can just stare at a bar full of liquor, which is my preference.
Exactly. And then from there, we ran off to Belly Wine Bar, which is over by MIT. And I had been told by Levy, who was on our show last week, that that Belly Wine Bar is the best wine bar in the city or in the Boston area.
Did you find that to be true?
So it was amazing. And now we're going to have Liz Velarde, who's the wine buyer owner of Belly Wine Bar, on the show today as well. It's our Cambridge show.
It really
I can't call
is.
It the Boston show because it's in Cambridge, which is, I mean, it felt very Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And very adorable. I loved it. Kind of Chicago as well.
I had a... Was there still sort of, you know, a palpable tension or air about recent events?
I have to say, I mean, I took the bus in, got there at like 5, took the bus out at 10 a.m. Every single person I ran into, spoke with, was so generous and I don't know, seemingly, I think, ready to not necessarily move on, but resilient, I would say. And when we were at Belly, they were doing a special kind of benefit for the One Fund, which I think is the main charity that the mayor and the city of Boston put together directly after the terror attacks on the Boston Marathon. And all of their proceeds, all of their sales of rosé that day were going to the One Fund. And I thought that was amazing at Terroir on that exact same day, which was Thursday the 25th. All of our sales of Boston Boual Madeira went to the One Fund. And actually, we decided to extend it through the whole weekend. So if you
go to any
Terroir in the city right now, get a glass of Boston Boual Madeira, and all the proceeds will go to the One Fund. Also in studio, I don't actually know if you're from Boston. Lily Virginia.
Lily Virginia?
Well, I'm not from Boston, but I was actually born there. Does that count?
That sounds like you're from Boston.
That's actually, I mean, you took a chance there and it actually worked.
It worked a little bit, yeah.
Where were you raised?
I was raised in Berkeley, California.
Okay. I think I knew that. We're gonna get more from Lilia in a little bit. She's a delight and she's gonna play us some of her amazing music.
But it's the Boston show. It is officially
the Boston show
now.
I'm trying to find a way to tie in our front of house this week.
Maybe this musician sang with the band Boston one?
Maybe this
or listened
musician
to it?
Of great mystery played a stadium show in Boston. I'm sure she did.
Yeah.
So speaking of which, we've last week we revisited an old front of house because we've been going back and digging up a couple of our favorite
feeling
gems
nostalgic.
To do a best of. Yeah. We're doing a little best of series this month. So this week we wanted to go back and revisit what I think is my personal favorite, only because it was such a horrific experience for me. That reliving it.
Horrific? Really?
It was bizarre.
This is actually the day I met Jen, too.
This happened on the day you... That's correct. I totally forgot about that. All right. Well, without further ado, it's time to revisit your favorite segment and mine, Front of House. Front of House?
You know, our...
It's your favorite story. It's front of house. It's a front of house.
Really got to find out who made that jingle. That thing is gold.
I hear she's expensive.
She is expensive. She's also incredibly good looking.
So front of house, our segment where we investigate, we tell the stories of the blunders and mishaps of the front of house servers, bartenders, managers.
And lucky as we are, we are going to be graced yet again with the presence of the lovely and talented Baroness Olivier, the Dame Joan Plowright, the Baroness Olivier, who so generously has agreed again to come in studio just to read this segment for us. So she's finishing her drink. Are you going to be good? She's finished. She's ready.
It was below freezing the night I met Celebrity X. After an armful of Grammy wins, relationship shockers, and a brief stint in Booze as Anonymous, Celebrity X had established herself as bona fide pop royalty. I, a lowly, nervous-handed plebeian, had no chance against her powers. I was nearing the end of my shift that night at Restaurant X, a newly erected gastropub on the Lower East Side. Dinner had been quiet that evening as I polished a bucket of demitasse. I dreamt of what I had waiting at home. Peanut butter-filled pretzels, at least 2 cans of Modelo, and 5 full seasons of West Wing streaming on Netflix. My lips tingled with anticipation. "Don't wind down just yet," I heard my boss whisper in passing as he sauntered through the dining room on a phone call. He covered the phone with one hand and winked at me. "We have a special guest coming after hours," he said. "I'm losing my shit." He was an excitable gay Irishman and routinely rolled his eyes back in his head whenever something went decidedly good or bad. Celebrity X, as it turned out, was not only on her way. A friend of a friend of a friend who called Restaurant X and requested that they stay open past the normal 2 o'clock closing time to accommodate her crew, but was on her way with a bus full of 30 loud-talking star fuckers. They would be given whatever they wanted, I was told, and I would be their girl slave until they felt fit to leave. I heard her before I saw her. Celebrity X's entrance was the stuff of magic. In she glided, her able-bodied security outfit forming a human wall around her, feet barely touching the floor as she removed her diamond-studded sunglasses. I hovered in the corner with my hands in my pocket, trying to appear as if I was unfazed by it all, when she stopped, looked me over, and said with a hiss, "Are you mine?" "I am serving you, yes," I said. She frowned, let out a long, dissatisfied sigh, and walked back to the bar. And so it was that I found myself carrying a tray of 60 chilled Patron shots to a crowd of designer-clad 19-year-olds, each somehow barking orders at me without once making eye contact. I felt as if I'd somehow been transported into that scene in Eyes Wide Shut, only instead of masks, my cloaked aggressors were in Manolo Blahniks and draped silk. At one point, a young woman with blunt-cut bangs and a lisp asked me, "Do you like being a waitress?" To which I jokingly replied, "Not half as much as I love being a rapper." The joke was not received, and the next thing I knew, I was being dragged by the arm like a rag doll and deposited on the sidewalk in front of the restaurant by lispy bangs. "Stay here," she said. I was too terrified to contest. It was mid-January, and I tried to make smoke rings with my breath before remembering that that doesn't work. And Lispy Bangs was back, this time with a group of others, including, to my shock, Celebrity X. "She's a rapper!" screamed Lispy. I tried to save myself. "Oh, no, no, not really," I said. "I mean, I do it, but I mean, it's just silly stuff. A hobby, really." Celebrity X sucked on a cigarette as if the last remaining oxygen on Earth was stored in its filter, and said, "Let's hear a rap then. Nigel, rap against her. Like a battle." What happened next can only be described as biblical. A battle did indeed ensue, and Nigel, though very drunk, was a noble competitor. I kept up as best I could, Celebrity X laughing and clapping like a schoolgirl seeing her first circus. I was instructed to, quote, "get dirtier" by Celebrity X, and never one to disobey authority, I ended with a grand finish that included a line about twisting Nigel's men parts in a knot like a pretzel and selling them at a hot dog stand. Everyone seemed generally pleased by this, and I was declared the winner. 4 hours later, as the sun rose on the after-party, Celeb X and crew began to file out. On her way to her tour bus, security beasts standing by, she grabbed my face with two hands, and she kissed me. She held the kiss for what seemed like 3 solid minutes, and I held my hands awkwardly at my side, eyes bulging. "You're a star," she said, and with that, she was gone. I walked to the Q train in a daze, not sure of whether to call my best friend to squeal or file a police report. When I finally arrived home, peanut butter pretzels staring at me from their station on the kitchen counter, I knew, suddenly and soberly, that I was, at last, a woman. Thank you.
Oh, it's good to go back. When was it? A couple months ago, wasn't it?
I think it was episode 58?
58, I think, yeah. I miss the dame. We haven't seen her in a couple weeks.
She'll be back in person.
Yeah, she'll be back. She's taking a brief holiday in Umbria.
Just having some work done.
Yeah, hey, come on now. Let's not drag out all the dirty laundry. Let's drag out some clean laundry. So in studio today is a delightful person, of which I'm a very big fan, and a wonderful musician. Lily Virginia is with us. Yeah. Thanks for being here, Lily.
Thanks for having me, Jen.
I'm going to chat to you a couple minutes before we hear your dazzling mermaid music.
Okay.
So we were just discussing a little bit before. So you're born in Boston, yeah?
Correct.
Raised in Cali.
That's also true.
What brought you to New York?
A job.
Okay.
Yeah.
A good one?
Yes, it's been really interesting. For the past 4 years, I worked in music for film and TV. And so it's been eye-opening experience, both professionally and then also just living in New York teaches you some things.
Yeah, I would imagine. Did you come here from Cali?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is a shift that many people do.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it's a shift in tenor, isn't it? It's a shift in pacing. Every time I go to California, I'm like, man, this is great. I am so not used to this. okay, so you're working in music for TV and film. Any particular amazing stories that you must tell from that time?
Oh, you know, I don't.
Even-keeled. It's been an even-keeled
job. It's been, yeah.
No one made you rap battle?
No rap battles. Unfortunately not.
So you're working this job, and then you're playing out and recording and rehearsing at night or when you're not at work.
Exactly.
Do your coworkers, do they know about your music? Have they heard it?
Or is it
like Clark Kent Superman?
Well, they have. The thing is that it's just been me and my boss. So really my coworkers are kind of my alter egos, and I let them know a little bit about what I'm doing, but you know, there can be some in-office politics that can be difficult to navigate sometimes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, I've worked in the restaurant industry for years. There's no politics there.
Zero. Everyone gets along peacefully.
Drama-free.
Hold hand, kumbaya.
So when did you... I'm interested. I met you because you played a show with my betrothed. And we both just fell in love with you. And so when did you... Have you been playing music since you were a wee little lass?
I played some piano when I was a kid. I hated it. I never practiced. I was the worst, basically. And then one day when I was 16, I came home from hanging out with some friends and just I don't know. I was in the kitchen and just started singing the song, and I just wrote it down, and I was kind of confused, but I was also like, whoa, I just wrote a song. I could do this. And then I started writing a lot of other songs, and they were so bad, like really, really bad. But eventually they got a little better, and I started taking guitar lessons to kind of accompany myself, and then I fell in love with guitar, and you know, it's been a couple of years now. So
so has that entire time been here in New York?
No, that was in high school, and then, you know, went to college and traveled and, you know, got lost in life and then found myself and, you know, all of those good things.
That happen when you're in college.
Yeah, yeah, after college too, still happening. And, you know, I think I was trying to find those stories that you can actually write songs about. It's all very good and well to be a songwriter, but if you don't have anything to say, then kind of what's the point?
Yeah, I feel the same. I would love to hear one of the points.
Absolutely.
Can we hear one?
how do you describe your music style? Who are your kind of inspirations?
Well, I have a ton of different inspirations, and it's always difficult for someone to say, oh yeah, I'm like this, I'm like that. I heard one that I'm not sure if it's correct, but I really like it because I want it to be true. Someone said my music was like a vulnerable PJ Harvey. So I
listened to one song, the song on your Bandcamp, mm-hmm. and remind me of the name of it.
It's called Yuriko.
And it had that, like, yeah, that PJ Harvey kind of, like, guitar that has this, like, beautiful but, like, wrenching voice
yeah.
over this kind of, like, almost punk sound. Not punk, like, in a pop way, but in a, like, Sonic Youth, like, kind of way. And I really kind of loved that together, so I agree with the PJ Harvey side
of
it.
I do, too. It's sugar and spice, man.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Let's get it going.
We're just teasing the people now.
you know, and that's also playing with my band, so they bring the coolness to the music.
and they're all Italiano, is that correct?
Not all of them, but I have been known to play with some Italians who are awesome. Got an Israeli in the band as well. It's just a shit show. I can say that, right?
So what's the song you're going to play for us first?
This song is called Dream Train. It's coming out on my upcoming EP. It's personally one of my favorites. Kind of depressing, I'm going to put that out there. But I hope you guys enjoy it anyways. And without further ado... Take the subway like somnambulance. It's a dream train heading home. And you hold me close in self-defense, 'cause you're leaving me alone. Ooh.
disguise. Your love, my love, disguise. Your love, my love,
Lily Virginia, everybody, thank you so much. It's beautiful.
Thank you. We're going to take a break here now. This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to the Knife Show remix of Jesse Boykins III on the heritageradionetwork.org.
I will walk to you.
Grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
I will never get sick of that commercial.
I don't know why I haven't discovered how to download that yet. I need it.
The American West.
I loved it.
So, like I was saying earlier, I was in the Boston area, specifically Cambridge, and Levy Dalton, Mr. Wine, host of In the Drink. Sorry, that's Joe Campanelli. I'm just plugging Joe Campanelli. Oh, Levy would be happy, though. Levy is the host of I'll Drink to That. So you can see where those get confused. So
everybody's drunk.
He was in Boston. He lived in Boston for a while, and I asked him to reach out to some people for me to kind of let me know where I should go eat where I should go drink. And he reached out to Matteo Molo of the Wine Bottega and Andrew Holden, who's the GM at Eastern Standard. And they both gave me insane lists of where to go. But kind of the one place that was what they both recommended for the best wine bar in the city was Belly Wine Bar. And so we had to go. And I went in and I had a fantastic time. And I think we have Liz Velarde on the line. Liz?
Yes.
She is she's the owner and the wine buyer for the Blue Room, Central Bottle, and Belly Wine Bar in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Thanks for being on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
How are things? I mean, I can't help but ask, how are things in the area after what happened at the Boston Marathon?
They are. Last week they were a little low.
Mm-hmm.
I was away the week that it happened. I was on a plane to Burgundy, ironically.
Wow.
And my plane was boarding at 6:50, so I was a bit of a nervous wreck.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, and then I flew back on Sunday, and so I sort of missed it, but when I arrived, it rained about a day later, and everyone was feeling kind of very, nobody knew why, but everybody felt bad, and so it's been a little heavy, but the sun is out, and people are out in droves. The night after, the restaurant was quite busy, actually, on Saturday night, because, you know, we had a lockdown on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Where no one went anywhere, businesses closed, and people were, you know, food and drink tends to be therapeutic.
I totally agree. I mean, after and during Hurricane Sandy, not quite the same, but people were ready to go out and be out. Well, I had a wonderful time at Belly, and while I was there, you were having like a fundraiser for the One Fund.
Yes.
And you were selling all rosé.
Yep.
All the rosé that you guys had in-house and all proceeds went to the One Fund. How did that go?
Well, it was all three properties, so Central Bottle, the Blue Room, and Belly, and we came in at about $3,100.
Amazing.
For the evening. Yeah, it was awesome. I mean, it blows me. I'm happy to turn over $3,100, obviously, to the One Fund, but it was amazing that many people came out to drink rosé.
Absolutely. I mean,
level.
I will say it was a beautiful day when I was there on Thursday, and
yep.
And there were definitely people out, and you also were serving my favorite rosé in the world, which is the Amistoy Rubentus. It's a chocolatey rosé that is in high demand when it comes in the season. But so I, you know, in talking to your husband, he was telling me how you guys you're kind of rooted in New York. Is that where you started in the wine business?
No, we are New Yorkers by way of lots of stops, mine in Texas. I know the wine business came to me, basically, I think, kind of like everybody in the restaurant. We think we're going to go in one path, and then suddenly we get sucked into restaurants.
Exactly.
And so I got...
Somehow I got...
The gravitational pull of this restaurant sucked me in, and my predecessor was extremely forward-thinking, so when I got here 13 years ago, she actually had Chocoli from Chomini Chanas, actually, that she referred to as Bosque White, because we didn't know exactly what to call it.
Didn't know how to pronounce the T and the X together.
We actually had it for the Chomini Chanas part, but we were sort of like, are people really going to ever order chocolate? You know, like, so Bosque White seemed more approachable.
Mm-hmm. So so you have three places. The Blue Room was the first, correct?
Correct.
And how many years has that been running?
The Blue Room has been under with us for 16 years.
And what is the style of food and drink that you guys provide there?
Well, like I said or alluded to, the wine list has always been pretty progressive. So it may not, you know, 16 years ago, the natural thing wasn't quite as big as it is now, but it was always sort of offbeat, and it kind of took on our rule of thumb was no Merlot, no Cab, no Chardonnay. and the food has always been, the food, however, though, has always been sort of locally sourced, organic, if we could. We had... our original chef started the Fresh Sheet here in Boston, and so that was kind of like the sort of first farm-driven produce kind of facts. It was that long ago to go around town and get people to buy things in bulk.
And so then after the Blue Room, you opened Central Bottle.
Yeah, and that was only three and a half years ago about.
So it's still relatively new. So is the same kind of wine concept from the Blue Room, was that taken over to Central Bottle?
It was. A lot of people at the Blue Room found that, you know, they would say, oh, I had this fantastic wine. Where can I get it? And then I would contact a distributor, an importer, and sort of try to get a list together of local shops. And then people would have to drive, you know, they have to leave the little confines of Cambridge and travel, you know, far and wide to Boston. And
So far away.
Over the river. And so we thought, you know, maybe we should open a wine shop and just let everybody, you know, kind of take the same idea and, you know, just make them drink the Kool-Aid of, you know, small producer, natural, yummy, affordable, you know, and put all that over in central bottle. So we did.
I mean,
and
I
we
was,
added cheese.
Yeah, so you have cheese there as well, which, I mean, they go together pretty naturally.
Yeah.
I, you know, being there, I was really excited. I feel like traveling around the U.S., I haven't necessarily found a wine bar or wine shop that made sense in the same way that a lot of places do in New York City. I know we're really spoiled here as far as the wine that we can get, the distributors, what they have, especially the natural wine side of it. So then when I went to Belly, I was really happy to see what was going on. You had, you know, importers like wines from Zev Rovine, who is a good friend of ours. We've had him on the show. Yeah, Jen and I have had Zev on the show, and I'm so happy to see his wines there as well. So was Belly kind of, where did that concept come from? Because you've got the Blue Room, you've got Central Bottle. How did you kind of twist it around into a wine bar as well?
Yeah, so the Blue Room, sort of in a very abbreviated response, basically was the back sort of half of our restaurant that we use for private events mostly, and we sort of took a financial take on it first and said, what's happening here? You know, and we sort of said, I don't know. It had its separate entrance. It had its own kind of feel. It was sucking a little energy from the restaurant at night, you know, and so we kind of took it down. At the same time, Central Bottle was sort of, we were kind of, the Blue Room and Central Bottle together were sort of, you know, getting known for having interesting wine and, you know, something to say about wine. So we thought, maybe we'll put a wine bar back here. We had Chef Robert join us about a year and a half ago, who's our chef at the Blue Room, who makes unbelievable charcuterie. I don't like to sort of, you know, toot my own horn too often, but that kid can make some charcuterie. And we thought, what could we put together here that would sort of display people's talents? And so we thought, wine and charcuterie. Hey, let's open a wine bar. And so, lo and behold, we were knee-deep in this idea that was a lot of fun. It was so much fun, and it's still so much fun. The idea of sort of making wine not so snooty, I'm not sure, has really come to Boston. You know, like, New York does a really fantastic job of kind of, like, on many levels, every way, of kind of reminding you that you're in this city that's way bigger than you are, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and Boston doesn't always do that. You know, we tend to be a little snooty over here. So it was like, let's be a little less snooty, and let's have fun. And let's just remember that this is just, you know, this is fermented grape juice. And at the end of the day, you know, let's not take this too seriously.
So, speaking of the fun you have at Belly, I mean, just your wine list, basically, it says wine, yo.
That's like, it does say wine, yo.
Wine list, yeah.
yeah, it does.
So there's like kind of a lot of irreverent humor, and you also had a binders full of women menu page, right?
We did.
Wine-wise.
We did. Yeah, because Mitt Romney is absolutely worth poking fun at.
and then one of my favorites, you have a, you know, kind of descriptive, you have adjectives about all the different wines that you have on the list. And my favorite is fizzle.
Well, it's funny because you mentioned Matt Molo before you. And Matt has always discusses the fizz belt as being sort of, you know, Lambrusco and all around Amelia. And after a while, and then it simultaneously happened that we were also had the Snoop Dogg. I think it's like, you know, you can change any sentence into like, you know, Snoop Dogg language. I can't think of the word now. And so we did it for briefing, you know, for the servers to try and make something fun of it. And that was sort of born of that whole.
I think we could call it is Latin.
Right, exactly.
IZ Latin, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm, absolutely, for sure. Something that Caesar definitely would have.
Amazing. So what else do you guys have on the forefront? What is the next, not necessarily venture, but focus at the wine bar?
The next focus at the wine bar, I've been kind of playing around. So like I said, I actually kind of, I think, came about wine sort of backwards. I fell in love with the Piedmont first and sort of was like, Burgundy, whatever, you know, like, okay, fine. And a lot of people sort of looked at me like, yeah, one day you'll see what's going on. So I actually think I would love to bring a little bit of irreverence to Burgundy, you know, to the Pinot Chardonnay set, which I think I've devised. We did a list. It was Barbera, you ignorant slut, which I got in a lot of trouble for. But it was, you know, it was the takeoff of Jane, you ignorant slut,
yes,
from Saturday Night Live. And so her response is, Dan, you pompous ass. And so I think it'd be a lot of fun to do. Pinot Noir, you pompous ass.
That would be fantastic. Please come to visit me at Terroir, because we are doing slightly a Burgundy focus, and I'm doing my best to like squeeze in whatever like weird like Passatout Grand, you know, Gamay from Burgundy, you know, super totally natural, Polonie Montrachet, like that kind of thing.
And so, if you tell me when you're coming, then I will join you at the bar, and we can do a staged fight in which we call each other ignorant slut.
That would be fantastic. And I would like to record it and bring it back to some of the women here. At the end of that wine list, because that was Binder's Full of Women too, I felt like I needed to put a disclaimer that said this was written by a woman. And
amazing.
I would love to have a soundtrack maybe that just went through the restaurant of us.
I'm on it.
Okay, good.
So Liz, where can we check out all of your restaurants, your wine shop, your bar?
You mean like online in cyberspace? Or,
exactly. I mean, it is in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Kendall Square is the neighborhood.
Which is a great trip for a New Yorker. It's easy and great.
Yeah, thank you. Let's see. Well, we have www.bellywinebar.com, theblueroom.net, that's the ugly stepchild, it's got a .net, and then centralbottle.com.
And I think at bellywinebar.com you can get links to both places, correct?
You can, and you can do it too at theblueroom.net. It's kind of discreet, but they're there, and and there's more irreverence, you know, packed in every click.
I love it. Well, Liz, you ignorant slut, it's been so fantastic speaking with you.
Thanks, Liz.
Back at you. You too.
I'll hope to see you soon.
Oh, definitely.
This is The Morning After on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Eureka by Lily Virginia on the heritageradionetwork.org.
HeritageRadioNetwork.org is a member-supported nonprofit organization. If you like what you're listening to, go to our website and click that donate button. Become a member and get special discounts, invites, VIP treatment, t-shirts, and more. Support us and our mission to bring you the freshest food content in the nation.
And we're back here on The Morning After. If anyone can remember back to 10 episodes ago, which I can absolutely remember.
That was a great day.
I don't think it was as beautiful as it is today. But
Scott, we've missed you.
Scott, we've missed you.
Oh, so nice. I've missed you, too.
Scott Haas, he is our clinical psychologist. He's a James Beard Award-winning man for the radio segments that he's done. He is also the author of the back of house. God, Scott, I'm saying
that's okay.
Front of house.
Well, you
today.
Know, you got to go from the back to the front. If there's a front, there's a back, you know?
We do a front of house segment, so it's just a little narcissism on our part.
And so the back of house, secret life of a restaurant, and I actually got to go experience the restaurant that you spent all that time in. I was there on Thursday.
There you go.
It was
live.
Exactly, live. And I was happy to see it. You know, the biggest thing that shocked me, they were so friendly to us. They were so wonderful, so generous. But then seeing all of the servers line mm-hmm. up to run food.
Huh.
There was,
you mean at the pass there, right, right, right.
At the pass, I had no idea. I mean, it was probably like 10 people in line,
dressed in
black. And ready to run food in, very serious, very ready, very professional.
Absolutely.
And it was fantastic. So how have things been going since the book came out?
Things have been good. I've been working a lot on other projects and, running around promoting the book and eating and cooking. And with spring here, I've been cooking a lot of ramps and morels and fava beans and all kinds of good stuff. So, happy camper.
So Jen and I are so sad that we missed your event at Barbalud, right?
Yep. No, it was at Balud Sud. So right next to Barbalud there on the west side, and that was a lot of fun too. Yeah, Danielle Balud put on a party for the book, which was really quite stunning, and stunning in the sense that his generosity just kind of wasted me. And there, 70 people were there, and it was kind of humbling. And he stayed for the whole 2 hours and worked the room, and it was just like kind of a thrill of a lifetime kind of thing. So it was a lot of fun, enormous fun.
What was served?
Well, it was some of the menu items from his restaurant. So, in other words, there were it's all kind of a fog to me because I was like, oh my God, I'm here with Danielle Balud. But there was like this mess platters of some hummus, and then there were these beautiful vegetarian asparagus arancini type things, and then there were little falafel balls with dashes of hummus, and everything was really delicious. And I think it was all vegetarian, which is always a lot of fun.
And Balud Sud has kind of a Mediterranean
exactly.
lean
yep,
to
yep,
it.
Yep, exactly. Southern French chiefly, and then he's thrown in some African things. And some Middle Eastern things. It was just spectacular.
So how did you get to know Daniel Balud?
I met him 17 years ago, I didn't know him. What happened was I went there for lunch to Danielle, kind of a treat for a big birthday, and went there with my wife, and we were sitting there eating the food, and the meal started around 1, and without exaggeration, we were done around 4:45, and I just had never had food quite as delicious as that in a room as much fun as it was. So I turned to my wife and I said, I really want to learn more about this guy. And I started to interview him over the years. And the real big bonding experience came about 8 or 9 years ago when he was invited to go to Park Hyatt in Tokyo, about 2 weeks after Lost in Translation came out. And he invited me to join him. So I was one of three journalists who joined his entourage. And we spent 5 nights there together. And Andrew Carmelini was on that trip. Richie Teresi was on that trip. Mark Fiorentino, who's still Danielle's baker. And it was just an incredible experience because the only person who had been to Japan before was Carmelini. And the rest of us were completely blown away.
That is quite a cast.
It was spectacular. And Teresi was still a line cook at Cafe Balud. And Carmelini was still running Cafe Balud. So everybody was sort of at the beginning or middle of their careers. And as I say, it was really a bonding experience because Danielle has more energy than anyone I've ever met in the entire business. There it was like at 3:00 in the morning and we're coming back from some bar or restaurant and he was like, let's keep going. There was another place I really want to see. And like people had to restrain him literally at one moment we were at a cab and he saw a karaoke bar that really interested him. So he literally was trying to open the door of the cab and Carmelini's like, no, chef, you cannot. We're in the middle of traffic. Please stay in the car. We're going back to the hotel now.
and everyone is younger than him also at this moment.
Yeah, exactly. But he's got incredible energy. I mean, he's the real thing.
My only interaction with Daniel Blood, I've met Daniel Jonas, his wine director, many times, but right. Daniel Blood was at 11 Madison Park after they won the James Beard Award for Best Restaurant in America. And Daniel Blood was standing on the bar with a bottle of champagne. He opened it and was just like throwing it over the entire crowd.
That's what I'm talking about. Exactly.
And so what you just said, yeah, actually makes complete sense.
I want to go to Japan with him.
Me too. I want to go back to Japan with him. What's amazing about that trip too was, as I say, I had not been there before, but I was completely enamored of everything, not everything, but so many things that we experienced there that I have now been back 9 more times. And Japan is the country that I write about most in terms of my food reporting. I have a very nice network there, and I've learned an enormous amount about Japanese gastronomy. So he really, I credit him with having introduced me to this new passion in my life, this passion for Japan and passion for their gastronomy.
Is he, I'm thinking back, is he the person who introduced the filmmaker for Jiro Dreams of Sushi to Jiro?
I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know.
I think he may be, which would make entire sense also.
Yeah. Entirely possible.
Well, I can't help but ask, how are things in Boston for you at this moment?
You know, I live less than a mile from where the murder suspect was apprehended by the police, and on that Friday all the sirens were going and there were massive numbers of police and state police and so on, and the city was, it was really like a ghost town. But I I got out and I walked my dogs twice and I drove to work because I didn't want to be intimidated. And now the city is really restoring itself to a degree of normalcy. It's a very resilient place. I mean, I was in Manhattan about 5 days after the 9/11 bombings and attacks, and it's somewhat similar on a much smaller scale to that, in the sense that people are going back to doing what they did. And also you feel a greater sense of community. Boston is not a notoriously warm and fuzzy city, but it's now become, people are friendlier. People are much friendlier. And I think that's really, of course, a positive thing.
And I wonder if that, personally, I was not here. I came to New York in December after September 11th for the first time, actually. So I did not know what it was like before that, but I imagine, I mean, and just being in Boston, I felt so welcomed, and
absolutely
everyone.
That's a change.
And again,
I'm not from here. I'm from the New Jersey, New York area. My mom's from East New York, Brooklyn. My father's from Manhattan. And when I moved to Boston, I was stunned by how unfriendly a city it is. It's a very gritty city. So the change that you experienced in it, in terms of it being friendly when you were here on Thursday, it may be connected to the tragedy that took place. People are definitely in the supermarkets and on the streets and stuff. People are definitely friendlier. And there's a sense of people looking out for one another. I think people were completely devastated by the attack, probably in part not only because of the magnitude of it, but also because it's one of those events that anybody could have been there. It's such a fun event normally, and we all could have pictured ourselves there.
Well, all our thoughts are absolutely with your city right now, and I had a lovely time. They welcomed
me.
That's
great.
So
you ate well, apparently, too.
I definitely did. Scott, where can we find your book, and where can we check out any of your other work?
I would go to Amazon. I would look for a back of the house there. It's available at all the other bookstores in New York and all around the country, but I've been telling people to go straight to Amazon and order it for Kindle or for as a book, and that's where you'll find it. In terms of my work, I'm doing a lot of work on, as I say, on Japan, which is appearing in strange places, Travel and Leisure, Southeast Asia, and a magazine called Sawadee, which is EWASDEE, the Thai In-Flight Airlines magazine. And I have a piece allegedly coming out sooner or later in Sever on Japanese bento lunches that are available on the trains in Japan.
Thank you so much for coming back on the show, Scott.
Thank you. Be well.
You as well.
You too. Nice to have you, Scott.
Thanks.
We'll,
bye-bye.
We'll be right back on The Morning After with What's on the Menu at Chardonnay's and a little more from Lily, Virginia.
Thanks again.
You're listening to the Paper Twin Remix by Knife Show on the Heritage Radio Network.org.
And we are back here on The Morning After on Heritage Radio Network. So we talked a little bit before about, we've actually been talking a lot on the show lately about weddings, which is my fault. I'm sorry, everybody, because I'm getting married in October.
Bridezilla!
So it's on. I am a bit of a bridezilla. I actually have been on an email chain with my mother and grandmother about the bridal shower, which some friends of ours are generously throwing for us. And I found myself the other day, you know, like sitting in a house robe, writing an email to the women in my family about my bridal shower. And I was like, oh my God, it's happened. No amount of cool can ever cover up what I've become. I am a bride to be, full stop. No question. But in the light, in light of that, and in honor of that, I wanted to visit that world for this week's Chardonnays. But we have.
What's on the menu with Chardonnays?
It's a great jingle. This week we're doing a little something special, though, because I've actually invited our event planner and studio to explain the menu to us, as I really just don't feel qualified to do it myself. She's just been amazing. She's a coveted talent in the industry and flew all the way here from Duluth, Minnesota, which is amazing. So ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, just put your hands together for Miss Margie Pulaski. Oh, wow. Oh, you guys are nice. Thank you so much. You guys are too cute. Now, I've only been to New York City once before, but that was to take my foster nephew to the Lion King, which just, you know, blew my mind. They're people. They're people, puppet, animals, all at the same time. I was a mess. I mean, I had to take a Benadryl. I cried so hard. My eyes just swelled right up. My nephew had to lead me back to the hotel by hand. I almost got hit by a bus. But I am really thrilled to be back to present this Chardonnay's wedding menu to you guys. Now, our evening will begin with a cocktail hour on the East Patio, featuring almost de-thawed shrimp cocktail, seasonal crudité, and a spinach artichoke dip your Aunt Janice insisted on bringing, even though the event is fully catered. As we make our way into the East Wing dining room, make sure and grab a few chocolate-covered strawberries, cut into the initials of the bride and groom, along with various other shapes, including giraffes, tiny hammers, a lady's handbag, and for those who biked here from Brooklyn, a mustache. Oh, gosh, Uncle Terry's holding it up to his face as if it was actually his mustache. Somebody Instagram that. Get that on Instagram. He's so silly. Now, our first course tonight is going to be a real treat. Atlantic tuna niçoise, drenched in an alarmingly shiny yellow concoction with a completely irrelevant radish and dill garnish. Now that your taste buds are truly tingling, go ahead and throw back 6 to 8 dinner rolls to avoid talking to the cousin you used to practice kissing with. Oh, say by the bell, here's our entree. You ordered the fish since you are 4 days into the skinny bitch diet, so here comes your pan-seared tilapia with spring potatoes and haricot vert. Holy yums, Batman. Wow. Now, don't think we're finished with you, noble diner. There's still a sweet treat with your name on it. Look out, Mrs. and Misters. Here comes a family-style platter of ladyfingers and a creme glace, followed by a fruit bowl, followed by a topping tower of bourbon balls and a mint sauce, followed by bananas foster, followed by peach sorbet with a coconut dust, followed by chocolate mousse fudge squares, followed by an espresso Ghirardelli martini, and then it's time for some wedding cake. Well, that was fun. So that's what we're going to be having at the wedding at Chardonnay's, catered by Chardonnay's Catering, LLC. Thanks so much for having me. I'm going to head back.
It's been fantastic to have you. I'm amazed that you flew in just for that.
Well, you know, I never pass on a vacation. Just the other day, you know, I really don't go further than 2 miles. I have a bit of a agoraphobia sort of thing going on. So I actually have 3 acres fenced in, and that's pretty much where I've been the last 16 years. But I did the other day. I went out to the Walmart in Breckenridge County, and that was great. I got some TP and a new toothbrush.
Thank you for making some really big life, you know, strides for Jen and Lindsay. And I'm also interested to ask you who the groom is.
Oh, I'm not at liberty to say. He's actually Persian royalty. I also just can't pronounce his name. So
understandable.
It's a lot of consonants.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to kind of make that kind of mistake.
No, I certainly wouldn't. But it was a pleasure being here with you girls. I think what you do was just fantastic.
Thank you so much. I mean, and when I'm getting married, I will absolutely get in touch with Chardonnay's.
Sure. Please do call me. I'll give you a card.
What's on the menu with
Chardonnay's? She was nice.
She was real sweet.
She was really sweet. Speaking of really sweet, still in studio with us patiently is the lovely Lily Virginia. with another beautiful song.
To take us out.
To take us out.
Can let us know where people can find your music.
Well, I'm on the interwebs, and we've got one song up that you guys played previously, so that's lilyvirginia.bandcamp.com. You can also find me on the Book of Face.
And the Facebook.
Yeah, Facebook.
Remember when it was called The Facebook?
I do, yeah.
I kind of blocked
we're
that
so,
out.
Yeah. We're so old, I guess.
Where can we find you on Facebook?
Just, you know, do a little Facebook search for Lily Virginia Music and like it, and then I'll let you know when the EP is coming out and upcoming
great
music video.
Well, we'd love to have you back when the EP comes out. We'll do a little premiere.
Oh, that sounds fantastic.
Thank you so much for being here. Everybody, this is Lily Virginia.
Thanks for having me. Walking on home, 6 a.m., smile on my face, song in my head, it's you, it's you, dawn on my back, heart in my eyes, bruised on my lips, it's no big surprise, it's you, it's you, jokes, you make me feel clever, you make me feel clever, so
thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.